do something fun with the family. Come downtown and go to the auto show January 20th through the 22nd at the CHI Health Center. Get inside the newest cars, trucks, and SUVs and see some of the hottest electric cars like the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Race a NASCAR remote control car. See beautiful classic cars and visit the Subaru Pet Adoption. Free admission for veterans on Friday. Get out and go to the auto show January 20th through the 22nd. Find more at omahaautoshow.com.
Oh, we're in for a long one. A long weekend, that is. And you deserve to spend it on the couch with a glass of something good. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered quickly. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's DRIZLY.com today.
Welcome to Festival Nation on the Pantheon Podcast Network. Here's your host, Marla Davies.
Hey now, it's Marla Davies, host of Festival Nation, where we celebrate the magical world of music festivals. While we're going through some strange days and we can't gather in large groups to listen to live music together, we can still celebrate on Festival Nation. In upcoming episodes, we'll revisit some of your favorite festivals from the past, including Desert Trip, Lollapalooza, the Vans Warped Tour, Coachella, Bakken, the US Festival, and Day on the Green, and I'm sure we'll feature a few more. Please let me know if you have any ideas or any favorite festivals you've gone to. Always love your input. Find me on social at Festival Nation Podcast and on the Pantheon Podcast Network. Festival Nation teamed up with Skull and Roses, the festival celebrating the music and community of the Grateful Dead, which would have been at the Ventura County Fairgrounds the first weekend of April. And it was one of the first festivals to cancel for 2020. We were planning on doing a live podcast on site during the event and helping to promote Skull and Roses. The festival canceled before I had a chance to air some of the interviews. So we'll bring interviews with Oteil Burbridge from Dead & Company, Melvin Seals, and rock and roll photographer Jay Blakesburg. We'll also be releasing those interviews soon on Festival Nation and hoping to go to Skull and Roses in 2021. And the next Festival Nation podcast, I'm going to be talking with Midnight at the Oasis fame, Maria Maldar, who will share her current project with the Garcia Project called Spirit, which is a loving tribute to Jerry Garcia and the spiritual songs he performed. Well, me, your host of this podcast, Festival Nation, loves music festivals, and that's why I even started the podcast. And as you know, the 2020 concert season is a bust, and it's hard for me to believe. Probably for the first time since I was, 16 years old, I'm not going to see a summer concert, and I know you feel the same if you love live music. The Bay Area summertime concert venue, the Shoreline Amphitheater, has canceled its 2020 season, and I'm sure it's not the only venue across the country to call it quits for 2020. I live in the Bay Area, so that one hits pretty hard, pretty close to home for me. The latest festival news is Coachella has canceled their rescheduled festival, which was originally scheduled for April the 10th through the 12th and the 17th through the 19th, and then rescheduled for October. Its parent company, AEG, has instituted its deepest staff cuts in company history, laying off about 15% of their workforce and furloughing over 100 staff. Its sister festival, Stagecoach, also canceled. Coachella is really an eye-opener because that's a big festival. It was one of the first to reschedule and now canceled. I feel that many other festivals for 2020 are going to follow suit. Coachella, considered one of the largest drawing festival, more than 250,000 people attended over the two-weekend period, and it is one of the more influential music festivals in America. The festivals were shut down by the public health official of Riverside, saying the festivals attract hundreds of thousands of attendees from many countries, and if there is an outbreak and it occurs at Coachella or at Stagecoach, it would be impossible to track those who may be at risk. With a heavy heart, according to their announcement, the Governor's Ball in New York, scheduled for June, is canceled, and now they are looking forward to a 2021 season. Lollapalooza in Chicago, scheduled for July 30th to August the 2nd, has announced they have canceled. And from their official statement, they say, rest assured, we will be working hard behind the scenes to deliver Chicago a spectacular celebration of Lollapalooza's 30th anniversary in the summer of 2021. And we can't wait to celebrate with you. It's difficult to imagine summer without our annual weekend together, sharing the unbelievable energy generated when live music and our incredible community of fans unite. That's really well put. Summerfest in Milwaukee is canceled, along with two iconic festivals in England, the Reading and the Leakes festivals. Glastonbury canceled their event earlier this spring. At the time of publishing this podcast, the Lockin Festival in Virginia is still scheduled for October 2nd through the 4th, but as of now, they still have not announced their lineup. Outside Lands in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco has also not announced their lineup yet, and they have not canceled their festival, scheduled for August 7th through the 9th. And Bottle Rock in Napa, still holding out for their October 2nd through the 4th dates, and the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival, still holding on to those October 2nd through 4th dates as well. Included in the show notes is a link to a Billboard article with the most up-to-date festival and tour cancellations. And as always, we'll keep you posted on upcoming festival cancellations. It's starting to seem unlikely that we're going to see any large festivals in 2020. But it really has been amazing to see the improvisation online in the virtual world. Coming up today, we'll talk with Ed Vincent, who's the founder and CEO of Festival Pass, which is the world's first live events subscription service across music, film, food and wine, theater, and tech and innovation. We'll talk with Ed about the future of live events and where he sees music festivals going after the pandemic. As sheltering in place seems to go on and on and on, and things are finally starting to open up, people are getting kind of crazy at home, like crazy stir crazy is what I'm saying. And this is pretty cool because if you're going stir crazy and you want to spice it up a little bit, you might as well check out Adam and Eve because they've got 50% off almost every item. You can get tons of free gifts and receive free shipping too. All you need to do, go to adamandeve.com and add, when you go to the checkout, just type in FEST. F-E-S-T, you can do that right there at the checkout. Now, there's lots of free stuff. Of course, that's awesome. Who doesn't like free stuff? And free stuff to spice up your bedroom, even better. Select almost any one item for 50% off, and then Adam and Eve loads in all kind of other free stuff, too. Remember, it's important because you want to get the deal. Enter the offer code FEST. It's good for the podcast, too, by the way. F-E-S-T at the checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts, a sexy item for him, a special gift for her, or him and him, or her and her. Hey, however you play it, there's no judging here, right? And you can also get 6 free spicy movies, plus free shipping. It's all at adamandeve.com.
Festival Nation, celebrating the magical world of music festivals.
Now, please welcome Ed Vincent, founder and CEO of Festival Pass. Hey, Ed.
Hi, Marla. How are you?
I'm good. I wish I could see a festival. I'm looking toward the future here, and I am feeling like maybe there's going to be no festivals this summer. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that there won't be any of the traditional larger festivals. But I do feel in some capacity in certain parts of the country, there's more and more people willing to explore, you know, small gatherings, you know, just to get outdoors and be part and hear music.
So you think there'll probably be a little bit of a smaller thing. First of all, let's talk a little bit about Festival Pass. I actually kind of ran across you guys, and I'm not sure if we met because we were shooting a documentary. It's called Woodstock Nation last summer, and we were at Fest Forum in Santa Barbara, and you guys were there. And I was like, hey, so we actually interviewed for our documentary Pat Tully, who does your podcast.
Oh, that makes total sense. You put we're in full circle now. Yeah. So of course, Lori, who runs Fest Forum, she's on our advisory board for Festival Pass. And yes, we were all there.
Oh, then maybe I did run across you guys because it was a hubbub of activity. So it was, of course, they basically support people that, you know, promoters of festivals or all things festivals. And so, yeah, I mean, I got one of your wristbands, and that's why I'm a little bit of, you know, familiar with what you guys were doing. Of course, last year in 2019, it seems like a long time ago, festivals were just, I mean, they were talking about festival absorption and just, you know, the it was festival. And wow, how the world's changed in a couple months, right?
Sure. Not too far ago. That was only about 6-7 months ago, right?
I know, right? So why don't you tell us a little bit about this diabolical plan you had with, you know, for festivals, which was wonderful, I thought.
Sure. So sometimes context helps. So kind of understanding why we got to where we are today kind of explains a little bit about the model that we're seeking to achieve. Is that okay to go?
Yeah. Give us your history. Sure.
Sure. So, you know, I personally have been an entrepreneur for over 20 years and have built multiple companies in the tech space. And, you know, I had an e-commerce company in 99 that I sold in 2001. And then where the event-based business kind of hit me was soon thereafter. One small piece of backstory, which is kind of interesting, is Pat, who you mentioned, who is also the host of our podcast. And who you met out there. We've been friends ever since we were in high school together. And some of the evolution into entrepreneurship was because of our friendship. We used to throw big multi-thousand person New Year's parties in New York City, which is effectively a large event. And when we realized that the internet was an easier way to process credit cards for those events back in 1999, we decided that, wow, this internet thing's cool. And it eventually led to us starting our first company, which was,
okay.
Yeah. So moving forward, for most of the 2000s, I ran a agency, which is an experiential agency for activating brands at large events throughout most of the 2000s. And the reason I bring that up is it really kind of brought me to, you know, my love of live events. And at that time, we helped launch a bunch of film festivals. We worked with the Sonoma Valley Film Festival. We helped launch Vail Film Festival. And then I created a film festival down in the Dominican Republic. And during that time frame, we ran for many years a festival down there, as well as built a hotel in partnership with Maxim Magazine. But okay. the reason to bring that up is just the love of live events at scale and really wanting to participate in live events in some capacity. I then went on and built a technology company, a SaaS business that I sold in 2014. And then the last 5 years I've worked in data in entertainment. I created a consultancy and a software platform where we help people like A&E Networks and AMC Networks and Screen Vision, the people that run ads in front of movie theaters, as well as movietickets.com and a bunch of other companies. So the point I'm trying to make is we played a lot in the data space in entertainment. And during that process, I was asked to come in and help as a consultant to a company called MoviePass, which a lot of people may or may not have heard of.
Yeah, MoviePass was pretty cool. It's not around anymore, right, from what I understand?
No.
Okay.
No, and that's part of the story, right? So I was asked to come in as their interim chief data officer. And for me, I was fascinated about all the great data that they were collecting in terms of what movies people saw and how that data can be used to inform a lot of interesting decisions. Unfortunately, they had some other issues in terms of the business model and in terms of how they were financing it that kind of led to it not being sustainable. Uh-huh. But outside of that, during that process, I learned a lot. And this is the context I was referring to, because now we're back at a place where I have a long history of events. I have a long history of technology. I have a history of understanding how data works within very large multi-million subscriber subscription models. And I realized that the live events business overall is a really big business. It's a $200 billion a year business and throughout the globe. And I realized that with the right business model, we can turn, we can create a subscription marketplace for live events.
Right. So what do they get? I know the only thing I realized is we had those wristbands and you didn't have to have cash. And that was one of like a bonus for me. You have to fiddle around with that, but it is a subscription. So I'm sure I saw on your website, you're offering it for free right now, right? I mean, it's going to be hard to keep that up right during this pandemic.
So people can become members for free, but we have a credit-based system. And the way it works is as you become a paid member, you begin to receive credits. and you can then use those credits to attend events. So for as little as $9 a month, you get a certain amount of credits, or up to as much as $99 a month, you get even more credits. And of course, the more you commit to, the more credits you get on a lower cost per credit basis. But the idea really is banking those credits in your, you know, I almost call it an event savings account, because those credits roll over month to month and build effectively a savings account that you can use for thousands of events.
So is it for ticket prices or for merch or for what?
So initially it's about entry. So it's about tickets. So the idea is that you can use your credits for thousands of events and gain access to a ticket. You're already thinking into the future is because credits are a currency, it is a form of money. You know, we'll be able to apply that currency to many things. So initially it could be merch, it could expand into food and beverage, it could expand into digital and virtual events and numerous other things.
Now that all this has happened, what's going on with Festival Pass, or how are you handling this?
We're good. So it's been something we've been building over the past year, and the good news is you know, we were ready to go, you know, strong and live and tell the world everything about us back in March, April. We have a partnership with the third largest radio network in the country, who invested in Festival Pass and provided.
Who's that?
They're called Town Square Media. You're familiar with Town Square Media?
I'm not, actually, no.
Yeah, they have about 350 radio stations throughout the U.S., and they reach about 80 million unique visitors across all their websites. So they're a substantial company in the space. And what was great is that, you know, part of the deal is they're providing us millions of dollars worth of advertising throughout their network to really drive people to at least be aware of Festival Pass and become subscribers.
During the pandemic, I mean, it's kind of on, everything's a little bit on hold. There's not much entertainment. How are you handling that?
Yeah, so that's correct. So that was the silver lining I was talking about, is even though we didn't go out like with a big marketing message, it's allowed us to really spend some time building infrastructure. So as I related to before, there's a lot in the data space of building data infrastructure that I think would be super helpful, or will be super helpful, to all of our partners. And I come from that background, so I know how to do it. So it's giving us an opportunity to create the infrastructure today that once all events begin to come back, we can immediately just scale and you know, manage thousands of different venue and event partners, as well as manage millions of subscribers.
Okay, so like everybody else, you get a little bit of a pause and you get a chance to, you know, do some of the stuff, you know, in the back end that you can do behind the scenes instead of in front of the scenes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's allowed us to, you know, focus on launching our podcast, to build our partner dashboard so that people can manage the content of their events and you know, by themselves. We're building in all of our data dashboards. So what's great about people that own and run festivals, you know, there's always been a gap between knowing who's actually at the festival in terms of demographic and income and all the other information related to who your audience is. So we're building our partner dashboards to enable our partners to be able to see data. We have a daily graph built in our product that looks at over 250 million U.S. consumers. So when somebody comes to our website and they can join or sign up, we're able to understand a little more about them and at least go out to our data graph and say, hey, you know, this person that's a member of ours, what else might we know about them? What interests might they have? Do they like rock and roll? Do they go to movies? And some of that information on an anonymous level.
I was just going to say, there's a little creepy factor here. It's like, you know a lot about me. I'm not sure I like that.
No, I mean, the interesting thing about data in today's world, right, is it's about creating the exchange between the consumer and the reason to have data. You know, I think everybody pretty much already realizes is the if I can say it appropriately, the world of consumer data on the internet is already existing. So it's about having the power to be able to aggregate that data and then look for commonalities to say, hey, out of the thousands of people that are interested in going to this festival or are going to this festival, you know, 40% are female and 60% are male, and, you know, 33% prefer rock and roll over country. I'm just using these examples, but having that basic general information about who your audience is super helpful to the organizers to not only sell sponsorship, because all the sponsors want to know who's actually at the event, but it also helps them for many other reasons to target new consumers, to try and market, to spend media dollars to get people to go to their event. So there's a lot involved in it.
Right. Well, I have a long history in radio, so I understand getting the demographics. It helps sell your ads and et cetera, of course. But for the consumer, I mean, I know as a deadhead as well, but especially that group, I mean, they're kind of, and even our radio listeners, sometimes they felt a little like, I don't know if I want to give you all of this information because then you're, I don't know what you're going to do with it. So there is, it, I can see how it really helps on the business standpoint, but for the consumer standpoint, what's the advantage?
Yeah, big advantage. So think about, you know, what we have within our infrastructure. A lot of it is about learning and discovery and making the experience better for the consumer. That's the main goal of everything, right? So it's about, hey, I'm coming to this platform and I want to build a community within the platform the same way I would when I'm live at an event or a show. So by the consumer coming in and, you know, consenting to the aggregation of some of their data, what it does is it allows them to have a better experience. So similar to when you're utilizing something like Netflix, think about when you, not to say Netflix is perfect at recommending new movies or other shows that you might want to watch, but in general, if you think about the home screen of Netflix, you end up, you have access to thousands upon thousands of films or TV content. It would be impossible for you to kind of navigate through all of those and consider them as something you might want to engage in. So obviously, the more you're engaging in the platform, the more recommendations they're making. Hey, you right, would like this sure. movie because of what you did. So same goes for us, right? So we look at it as, hey, I signed in and I'm from New York and I signed up as a paid subscriber. And the first thing you're going to see in terms of the possible events you might want to go to are, hey, here's 50 things going on in New York that you might be interested in.
We're talking with Ed Vincent, founder and CEO of Festival Pass, and more after this.
Festival Nation, celebrating the magical world of music festivals.
Hey, it's Marla Davies, and this is the Festival Nation podcast. Today, we're talking with Ed Vincent, founder and CEO of Festival Pass. So you were talking about how you started in music and, you know, how you started loving film festivals and music and just going out. Can you think about what really hooked you on festivals? What was the first festival that, you know, you went to and you're like, oh, I love this. I want to go and do this again.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in the beginning, the first thing that hooked me from a festival perspective started on the film side and then kind of evolved into the music side and then also went to food and wine. So that's why there's one thing to note about Festival Pass is what's unique about us is we're the first kind of cross-genre subscription concept. So it's not about only music. It's about with my membership, I can go to a film festival. I could go to a concert. I can go to a music festival. I can go to a Guinness and Oyster Festival. I can go to a wine and cheese festival. So it's enabling the cross-genre ability to have one pass that gets you into everything.
To all those kind of festivals. But for you personally, Ed, seriously, what was your first, what was the festival? Do you have a first festival that comes to mind that really that brought you in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I'm trying to think, I mean, because as I was saying, definitely the film side was in the early 2000s. I spent a lot of time going to all the different film festivals, and I owned one. So that was kind of the impetus. And then there was a couple of film festivals that would also include music and film. And then I saw the evolution of things like South by Southwest coming to be. And as an entrepreneur for so long, I'm part of entrepreneur networks. And one of the things that I saw that I loved was the combination of tech and innovation, music, film, and all other forms of art. So when you think of something like the South by Southwest, it inspires all different senses. And I really enjoy when you can go hear, you know, somebody like Malcolm Gladwell, as an example, a book author and, you know, futurist talk about something at a a panel, but at the same time, you know, the same day, go over and see one of your favorite bands, and then in the evening, go see a film that's a great indie film. And the idea of all that coming together is what really got me hooked, and that's kind of what brought the cross-genre perspective to this.
That's very cool. Let's talk about movies then for a second. So that is one of the things I was just reading. They had lists of activities that were more risky, higher risk activity, lower risk. And they said a movie theater was not really ready for this pandemic because the seats are pretty close. Even the new stadium seats, you know, the more cozy seats, gives a little more space. But when do you think the movies, when are we go to a movie again?
Yeah, it's a good question. The question is all about when will you be comfortable enough to go? As an example, and because I come from that space, I have kind of my finger on the pulse. So some of the networks, over 50% of the theaters are already open again. So, you know, I'm in New York City, where they aren't open yet. You're in, I think, San Francisco or Bay Area.
Yeah, Bay Area is also, we're sort of on the same pace of opening as you guys in New York. A little slower.
But yes, on the movie theater side, 50% of all of the theaters within a network that represents over half of the country are already open. So, you know, whether it's in Texas or Georgia or Florida, a lot of theaters are already opening. But to your point, the big question is just because they're open, does that mean people are going to go?
Right. Well, I'm sure they're going to have to separate people and seating charts and things like that and make some more space.
Yeah, I think the beginning is hopefully they'll increase it over time, but most of them are going with the 25% capacity. So if the theater sits 100, they'll only sell 25 tickets to each screening.
From what I understand also from the movies is that, you know, a lot of production has completely stopped during this pandemic too, because people haven't been able to work and make movies. So are we going to see a lull in that, you think?
Definitely a lull in the new production of stuff over the last 3 months. But I've been seeing a lot of reports that some of them are beginning to reopen. Some of the productions are beginning to start up in a small capacity. And then a lot of the studios and content creators are going through the process of what are the safety protocols they need to put in place to allow people to come back.
Right. Everything's going to take, I think it's going to be a little bit of a slow opening and then also smaller. And I think you're just saying that smaller audiences at movie theaters, everything's going to be a little bit smaller. And I feel like right before this pandemic, things were getting really big. I mean, the festival scene was at its max, really, really ultimate popularity type thing. So what do you see in festival world, music festival world?
Yeah, I mean, what I do see is, first of all, I can't make any predictions for 2020. I know there's been a bunch of folks that postponed, obviously, spring festivals and put them into the fall and have not yet made a determination whether to have them or not. And then there's others that just canceled 2020, like Dove Ball, for example. You know, that was in June. They canceled that. That should have been this past weekend, I think. Mm-hmm. But they did. They're not rescheduling for the fall or anything. They're just wiping this year out and starting in 2021. But then you have others that still are holding on to the possibility that somehow they can potentially have them this fall. But again, I think where things will evolve to is to, if there are outdoor festivals and protocols can be put in place, you know, they'll try to hope to spread out the environment. Yeah, I think you're seeing from a concert perspective, a lot of venues are turning into drive-in venues.
Yeah,
I know Live Nation is producing dozens, if not hundreds, of drive-in concerts.
Drive-in concerts, pretty amazing. That's too bad. A lot of people closed down their drive-in theaters, and that's a pricey piece of real estate.
Yes.
So, I mean, we have one here in San Jose, but, you know, I don't know if they've explored it. The owners, you know, are kind of like, what's going on? So it's a cool concept.
I think a bunch of them are, they're using the parking lots of pre-existing arenas. So for example, here in New York, Yankee Stadium is going to have outdoor movies over the summer, but also I suspect they'll do some outdoor concerts. And I know there's a bunch of venues that, typically would be arenas per se that have big parking lots that they're going to turn into drive-in concerts.
Might as well. Now, one of the big questions is, and as a female, this always comes to mind, like, what about the bathrooms?
Yes. So again, a lot of them, they have protocols in place. So they will have bathrooms. They will only allow a certain amount in per time. And I envision it being very similar to what I experienced in New York City when people want to go to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods, is people just queue up and there's, you know, 50 to 100 people in line, all 6 feet apart as they're waiting to enter the store. I can imagine something being similar from a bathroom perspective.
See, the festival pass needs to hook up with the bathroom situation. And that would be like, you got a VIP bathroom. Yes.
Yes.
That's always important. So it's just, I'm just trying to look into the future and see how this is all going to look. And it's going to be more distanced. So, I mean, I went to a ton of festivals and, you know, I love a festival and it's not distanced at all. I mean, it's very crowded in there. So, sure. You know, they're going to, if, you know, we're going to say 3/4 of you can't go to this festival, how is that going to look? You know, they're not going to, you know, sponsors and promoters are not going to make the profit margins they were making.
Yeah, that's correct. And I see that affecting a lot of the, call it smaller non-for-profit theater groups and other things like that. So when I think of any kind of live event, you know, especially with what we're doing at Festival Pass, it isn't only just festivals, it's really all live events. Mm-hmm. So you referenced the movie theaters. I think they'll be able to get through it because, as we all know, movie theaters usually had about an 80% vacancy rate anyway, just at off times. So I think they'll work through that in terms of how the spacing of the seating is. I think it's going to be really hard for like Broadway theaters, like folks in New York City with Broadway theaters. You're packing 3,000 people into a tiny little theater. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be difficult. And to your point on the economics is when you have things like ballet or theaters like that, you just can't economically operate at a 25% occupancy. The money's not there. So
yeah,
so I agree.
What do you foresee? I mean, those, you know, those arts always seem to, you know, they struggle anyway, and now this just isn't positive for those smaller, those kind of, you know, groups, ballets, small theaters, things like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I honestly believe most of them will probably forego a fall season. Some have said they're going to come back and attempt to do a holiday thing because some places, like when you talk about ballet, the Nutcracker obviously is the thing that drives 50% of the revenue for the ballet company.
Yeah.
Throughout the year. So we'll see. Maybe they'll do more shows with less people. But
well,
I do believe
that's a lot of work for the artist, I'll tell you.
It is. But I do think that some people may just forego this year's season. So forego the fall season and just focus on, hey, by 2021, we're going to have, if not a vaccine, at least better treatment and better protocols and better tracing. And I do believe there's so many people working on the path to understand how to manage entry and exit. Like if you remember, you know, pre and post 9/11, the world of how people enter stadium versus how people go through airports, et cetera, mm-hmm. is, you know, people just got used to it. It just became the norm. You have to go through a metal detector. You have to,
right.
You know, now it's, you have to have a temperature check. If you're above, you know, 98 degrees or 99 degrees,
then
you get
home.
Pulled to the side. You get pulled to the side. And there's the more and more we learn, both from a medical perspective, as well as from a kind of, how do you say, risk management perspective, I think people will get more and more comfortable. There's
doing that, right.
Yeah, there's things like even the World Health Organization, there's an article today that they really don't believe most of transmission happened with asymptomatic people.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that. That's kind of positive because that was a freak factor because people were saying, I don't feel bad. So you go out, right? And then you are bad. So that's good to know.
Correct.
I mean, I like that to hear that because there's so many unknowns and it's just taking time to get through all that.
Yeah. So if they think that that's not likely, it's not impossible, but it's unlikely, that decreases the risk. So that means temperature checks could highly increase the ability to curb it.
Yes, absolutely. That's kind of positive. So you see some positive stuff coming out of this. You know, the truth is, you know, as Americans, we're ambitious. We go out even when we're not 100% feeling well. And I think, and I'm hoping this would actually make people, if you're not feeling well, if you're not well, please stay home. Just stay home. Don't spread it, because now we know how bad, how contagious things are.
Agreed. But in the big picture, as I think we all know, is events will come back. As we are Americans, we do like to go out. We like to participate. We're all about community. So even if it's going to take us 6, 9, 12 months to really get things moving again, I'm very bullish on the concept that live events will always exist and will always be a huge part of our life.
I absolutely agree. You know, and now with the advent of the Zoom technology and the Zoom performances, there may be still an aspect of people uncomfortable going out. They could still watch it at home.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I talk about this daily with both my team and many others in the industry is everybody saying, well, what's your virtual solution? Like, are you going to stream concerts? Or are you going to stream events? And the answer is sure. You know, we will, but it's going to be a complement to the live event. It's not going to be a replacement for. And I think we've been pulled into this environment that it had to be a replacement for. I don't know how your friends are, but I'm stuck on Zoom calls.
Oh, right.
5, 6, 7 hours a day. You know, the last thing I want to do by the end of the night is go back to another Zoom. Yeah.
That's funny, because I just started a vinyl show because I'm a DJ. And so it's a Saturday at 4:00. And the reason I even started it is because there's a festival here in San Jose. It's a street festival, the South First Music Festival. And it was in April and they had to go virtual, and I got involved with them and I started this vinyl party in April, and it was a lot of fun, you know, and I just for an hour, and I do a little trivia and play vinyl records and this and that. And, I get a lot of people watch on Facebook Live as well. And I do the Zoom room, but it's funny because some of my friends are like, listen, I'm just what you said. I'm on calls all day on Zoom. And I know that you're doing this great thing, but I can't deal with Zoom on a Saturday at 4:00. You know, I'd rather go out and get some fresh air or something. I'm like, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So that's why I think it will be a compliment, right? Mm-hmm. So once we normalize again and 80% of the interactivity is live again, then it will be a great option when, you know, you really love that festival, you know, in Palm Springs, and you just can't make it this year, but you don't want to miss this great set from one of your favorite artists.
Right.
So you log in, you check it out live. It makes you feel like you're a part of it, and you pay 20, 30, 40 bucks instead of 300.
Right. Yeah. I see that that's a really good way to look at the future. The other weird thing about festivals and, you know, especially music festivals is, it's a very risky environment because of the singing, because people love to sing. And that is one of, you know, the droplets and the contagion and, you know, pandemic and all that. So singing is kind of so weird to think that singing is a dangerous activity. What do you see? How long do you think people are going to have to wear masks at these events?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly simply believe, just like many other viruses, is until we actually have a vaccine that people are comfortable with, and or we move to a place where, you know, you call it herd immunity. I don't know what's going to happen in that capacity. But when people are comfortable that they're not necessarily worried about getting sick at a show, they'll get back to normal, right? And, you know, and they'll feel that way once they've either had the vaccine and or have already had it. You got to remember, right, is, you know, while nobody wants to get COVID, we've had over, you know, what, 2.5 million people that have been tested positive in the United States already. And just imagine all the people that hadn't been tested. So I'm not going to do the math from a health expert right now, but it's going to be, you know, it's tenfold of those who have had it probably have been exposed already. So over time, you'll either have gotten the vaccine that gives you the antibodies, or you would have had some form of it that also helps your antibodies.
Right. So that's that whole thing when kids used to get the chicken pox, and then parents would take their kid over to get the chicken pox.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I guess when we get less fearful of the whole thing, you know, if you get it, then you're not, I don't know if you can get it again. I'm not 100% sure on that. Or if you got it again, it would be less severe than the first time. There's still, I see, that's the problem. There's so many questions and people just, that's the thing. You said this earlier. When are you ready? I mean, I love a festival, but I just don't, I'm not sure, quite sure I'm ready to go out. And I wouldn't, if I, there was a, my favorite festival next weekend, I don't know. I don't think I'd be going. I'd be like, what about you? Would you, would head out there, or are you still cautious about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're mutually exclusive, right? I think you can be cautious and still enjoy some slow movement back towards what you enjoy. So, you know, I don't know about you in San Francisco, but here in New York on a nice day, you know, I put my mask on and I go walk down by the water and I see, you know, groups of 5 or 10 people that are friends all sitting together with their masks on, or maybe families of four that have been quarantined together without masks on, hanging out. So I think there's a way to begin to mobilize and be together with being cautious and still being socially, you know, distant and potentially just being in your own groups.
Your own, you know, bubble. What are they calling it? Social bubbles.
Social groups. But, you know, if you've already kind of know you want to go to an event and you're going to go with 5 or 10 of your friends and each of you have been responsible, the hard part is just responsibility, trust and responsibility, knowing that, you know, that group that you're going to be with, that's, you know,
also being responsible. That's correct. The thing about correct. The social bubble thing. You know, we have a bubble of friends, but then I don't, like my neighbor, right? He's in our bubble. But then when he's in his free time, I'm not 100% sure what he's up to, Especially because he was like, I'm going to a party with some strippers. And I was like, okay, you're in our bubble. And now you're going to bring your bubble into our bubble. I don't know about your bubble. You know, there is a lot of questions, yeah. But I think that you're nailing it with, and you know, I've heard this a lot. It's just going to take a little while, and it's going to be smaller gatherings. I also heard, now let me ask you one more question about this. If you've heard anything about this, now people are saying that maybe ticket prices are going to go down because they were super, super expensive. And now, I don't know, have you heard any correlation between, you know, the reopening and lower ticket prices?
The answer is, of course, right? So sometimes ticket prices have increased for various reasons, right? So one of the key ones is the artists themselves, right? So as the artists demand more money to show up, then of course the ticket prices rise in conjunction with that, among other, you know, pieces to it. But a lot of people are kind of seeing this almost as a reset. Some of the artists will have to accept less of a fee in order to ensure they can just begin to get everybody back into a place where economics start working again. So I think it's a revisit of how the model works.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's time, because it was getting, I felt like ticket prices were getting so, so expensive. And I talked myself out of going to some of these shows because I was like, gosh, that's so expensive. And I only have so many dollars in my entertainment budget, this and that. Right. And now really after this pandemic, I'm looking back at some of the shows I passed on right before it happened. And I'm thinking, oh, I wish I'd paid for that ticket. It would have been worth it for me, but you know how it goes. Well, it'd be nice to see a little bit less. And I was hearing, you know, through the grapevine about, you know, some of the bigger artists that were really getting those high ticket prices, you know, they probably maybe have to reset, like you're saying. But some of the smaller groups anyway, you know, that probably won't change, because see, I was supposed to go to a club show and it was in March, and now it's pushed back to September. And it's sold out show. With this band I love, Larkin Poe, and I don't know how they're going to handle that, because if it's sold out, then obviously you, not everybody's going to be able to go to that show, right? I don't know how they're going to figure that out.
Sure. No, that does make sense. And to your point is they may have to do it over two nights and then spread the tickets over two nights.
Okay, that's a good idea. Good idea. Yeah.
Some people, you know, they'll work on what it is. I've been having some conversations with there's this new association that was created after COVID called the National Independent Venue Association.
Okay.
Called NIVA. So in the U.S., there's about 5,000 independent music venues, or theatrical venues, I should say. And about 2,000 of those 5,000 have kind of banded together. And, you know, none of them have any kind of corporate or larger ownership. They're just individually owned places. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've obviously had some issues with the exact thing you're talking about, right? They're a smaller venue. They rely on ticket sales to drive most of their business. It's different than call it the Live Nations of the world, that have substantial sponsors and brands that are out supporting some of it.
Right.
You know, it's really alcohol in the venue, and ticket sales are the only two revenue streams for a lot of these small venues. So they're just trying to figure it out as well. And, you know, part of the thing we're trying to help them with is, you know, when they have to give refunds to an event that got postponed or canceled, if you will, because of COVID, you know, sometimes that's really hard for some of these small venues because, you know, they rely on that ticket price to, you know, feed the rest of their model.
Right. The refund. And then I think there's a fee possibly if they have to give a fee to them to give a refund. So that's the last thing they need.
Yeah. So one of the things we're trying to do, work with them and help them is, you know, potentially offer their fans, you know, the equivalent amount of credits on Festival Pass in return for, you know, what that ticket price might have been, because by the time they get a chance to then go use or want to go see a show, they can choose from any of thousands of shows because they received the credits on Festival Pass. Because whenever you postpone a show, you just never know, are you going to be available the night that it happens again? Is it going to be, you know, at the right time for you and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's really a drag when a show gets postponed. Years ago, I was supposed to go see Ozzy Osbourne. He postponed the day of our show at the Shoreline Amphitheater. So we held out, right, a whole nother season, a whole nother year to get to that show. And so we waited, and then they canceled, they postponed again. Then we refund on that one. Now they were supposed to play in 2020, and now COVID. So, I mean, yeah, after a while, you know, people are like, I think I just want my money back. So, or get the Festival Pass credit, right?
Yeah, it's a good solution for everybody.
I really sympathize, though, with the clubs, the small clubs, because those are indoor venues, and I think we're all feeling a little more comfortable being outside, social distance, correct, more space. But then when you're in those inside venues, that's kind of, you know. And the other thing I heard, of course, indoor venue, alcohol. Put those two together, and people, you know, their inhibitions go down, they're indoors, they're singing, they're closer, and, you know, then people get nervous.
I agree. Something we all have to work through. And, you know, at the end of the day, if it takes a slow roll into it, they'll all come back. We just hope that some of the small venues can financially make it. Yeah.
Thanks to Ed Vincent, founder and CEO of Festival Pass. For more information about Festival Pass, just go to festivalpass.com. Here at Festival Nation, we will continue to bring your festival updates, and we'll be keeping the festival spirit alive by featuring shows about your favorite festivals. Please reach out and share with me your favorite festival memories, maybe a favorite festival you went to. Just shoot me an email, festivalnationpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on social, on Facebook and Instagram at Festival Nation, and on Twitter at Nation Festival. And check out all of our podcasts at the Pantheon Podcast Network, at Pantheon Pods. Coming up on Festival Nation, we'll talk to Dead & Company's Oteil Burbridge, Jerry Garcia Band's Melvin Seals, and rock and roll photographer Jay Blakesburg. And you'll hear from Maria Muldaur from Midnight at the Oasis fame about her latest project, paying tribute to Jerry Garcia and the spiritual songs he performed. Any music used in this Festival Nation podcast is owned by the artist and is used for educational and illustration purposes only. Thanks for checking out, liking, sharing, and following Festival Nation on the Pantheon Podcast Network and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Talk to you next time. We will get by. We will survive. Peace.
Peace, love, and music. Thanks for being part of the tribe. For Marla Davies and everyone here at Festival Nation, until next time, tune in, turn on.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Matthew.
And we're from Audio Judo, the music discovery podcast.
If you're curious about new music or want to learn something new about old music, then start right here with us.
Here's a little sample of what we do.
And tonight we are talking about Pink Floyd's A Momentary Lapse of Reason.
Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy.
Matthew and the Atlas. Hunky Dory by David Bowie.
Yes, we are. Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino. Boston by the band Boston.
Oh, yeah.
I, for sure, was never cool enough to listen to the Smiths. Like, I feel like there was, like, this weird entry fee that you had to pay in coolness.
Have you seen the movie Less Than Zero?
Yes.
It kind of costs about that
much. Oh, okay, good.
Today we have a very special interview with a legendary singer, Phish. How you doing, Phish?
I'm doing fine, Kyle. Hello, Matthew. Yeah, just when I got a Skype call from Randy Valentine, it's like, you know, like, yeah, I think we'll tell that one to fuck off.
One of our listeners recently wrote to me and said that he was referring to you and I. He said, I like the cantankerous Gen Xer meets a less grumpy millennial thing you guys have.
So that's it. If you liked a little sample of Audio Judo there, please give us a listen.
And if you love music, come check us out at audiojudo.com or wherever podcasts are podcast.
With the Baker's Plus card, it's easy to get lower than low prices. For the win! Earn fuel points on every purchase and save up to $1 a gallon at the pump. The Baker's Plus card. All you do is win. Big, big savings. Sign up now at bakersplus.com and start saving. Baker's. Fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your favorites with the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Simply buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with your card. Bakers, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.